Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast from the European Academy of Neurology about headache. This is the second episode, and it's about migraine-specific therapies. And my name is Rolf Frontzek, a neurologist from the University Medical Center, the Netherlands. And we're here together with Masuta Sheena, neurologist from the Danish Headache Center. And I'll give the word to my colleague moderator for the first question.
Yeah, hello. My name is Dagny Hollerli. I'm also a neurologist, pain specialist from the West German Headache Center in Essen. Masut, very happy to talk to you today. We want to talk about migraine-specific therapies, and maybe we start with acute medications. I think at the moment, the triptans are the most important acute medication for migraineurs. What's your opinion about the triptans? What are the main things you want neurologists to know about triptans?
Yeah, so if we thanks for your invitation, and if we start with the migraine-specific therapies, we have to state very clearly that the first migraine-specific therapy been introduced back in the end of the 80s, beginning of 90s, and as you already said, triptans are migraine-specific medications. They were the first medications introduced in the clinical practice. They were these medications were designed to target migraine-specific biology, specific receptors, and introduced as an abortive acute medications. Unfortunately, in spite of the, you know, more than 30 years passed, we still have many patients not really tried triptans or tried only few triptans. So what we advise in the clinical practice that patients should receive migraine-specific medications because they are better than the simple analgesics or NSAIDs because of their specific affinity to the specific receptors targeting migraine biology. And they are pretty safe medications, and in most of the patients, well tolerated. So that's why triptans must be used in the clinical practice as abortive medications, but not as a preventive medications, because there is a risk of developing of medication overuse if you start taking triptans too much.
And then, of course, the next logical question is, what about the future? There are, for example, diethans and maybe even other medications coming. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, thank you, Roy, for this question. So about the future, I mean, in fact, it's already present in some of the countries. Some of these medications have been already approved. So there are two class of new migraine-specific medications being introduced in the clinical practice, not in all countries, but in some countries already. One is diethans, and diethans are different from triptans, because they act on the specific serotonin receptor, which we call it a subtype 1F receptor agonist. And these medications are approved in US, not yet in Europe, at least not in my country, in Denmark. And they act as an acute medication, so you take them during the attacks. And their efficacy, safety, tolerability have been shown in the phase 3 trials. And also there is also a trial on consistency of response of this medication. Another class of medications include GPANs. They are small molecule CGRP receptor antagonist, calcitonin-gene-related peptide receptor antagonist. They've been introduced just recently also in Denmark. And one of these medications, there are, in fact, there are three GPANs available not right now in US. One of them is exclusively abortive medications. One is a combination of abortive and preventive medication. And the third one is exclusively preventive medication.
When we talk about acute medication, we always have to talk about medication overuse headache. Do you can tell us something about the risk of the single substances? Are there differences? Maybe there will some change on the concept of medication overuse when looking at the new substances?
Yeah, medication overuse has been something first observed in the clinical practice more than 40 years ago, and some of our mentors and the colleagues from the last century, I would say now, so they introduced this definition of medication overuse headache, which was also adapted in the international classification for headache disorders. So the definition differs in terms of the class of medication. So when we talk about the triptans and combination medications, specifically with using the opioids in the combination, if you take more than 10 days per month this type of medications, then you are at risk of developing, or per definition, you have a medication overuse headache. For the simple analgesics and NSAIDs, it's 15 days. So we don't know exactly the mechanisms which lead to the development of the medication overuse headache, but we have some preclinical studies that in particular triptans are in a risk of developing of medication overuse headache because the central nervous system becomes sensitized and your sensitivity and threshold for migraine goes down. This is completely different now after the introduction of new class of medications of the gepants, because gepants apparently working both at an acute but also at the preventive. So it caused some kind of distortion in our understanding of the migraine treatment. So in the future, there will be a specific class of medication which can be used both as an abortive and also as a preventive. And this class is gepants. This means that if you start taking too much of these medications, you are unlikely to develop medication overuse headache because this class of medications works also as a preventive medications. So this will completely change our clinical practice when the patients can combine acute and preventive medications with the same class of medication. And this includes so far only gepants because we have data on gepants as acute and also preventative drugs.
Now, I agree, this is a very exciting development. I'm looking forward to see how this will be in the future. But in the more near future, about the diethylamines, I was wondering, what patients do you see should receive this new diethylamines? What's the benefit?
Yeah, for the diethylamines, I would say the question is that these medications, in terms of the tolerability, exhibit some side effects such as a dizziness, and also there is also a label on these medications that you cannot really drive the car the next 8 hours, and also operate with some the machines, and this is one of the let's say concerns with this medication. But otherwise, in terms of efficacy, it seems that these medications, I mean, this is only one medication in this class, efficacious. And in terms of the safety and tolerability was acceptable, and that's why this medication will be introduced. Whether this medication can go and replace the other acute medications, including the triptans, it's difficult to say now, but we have number of patients that's stating that they're currently used acute medications are either not well tolerated or they have some contraindications. Especially for the triptans, could be that if you have a history of the cardiovascular disease, then these medications are contraindicated. So in this case, the diethylamines or DTAN, one of the medications, can be now used because this medication doesn't cause any vasoconstriction, which is in contrast to the triptans. But you can also say the same for the gepants.
I have another question, which also pops up when talking to patients, especially when patients have a depression and taking antidepressants. So what is the risk of a serotonergic syndrome regarding triptans, but also maybe regarding the diethylamines?
Yeah, for the diethylamines, it's difficult to say. It should be, for both class of medications, it should be extremely rare. In my 30 years practice, I never seen a serotonergic syndrome, people using SSRIs and the triptans. Of course, it is stated clearly in the label, but this is something extremely rare. And as I said, that I haven't seen that. And I haven't heard that from my colleagues at the Danish Headache Center. So I wouldn't be concerned, because we know about the comorbidity between migraine and depression. And that's why I would say that I use that, and I haven't seen that. So it should be pretty safe. I'm not concerned about that.
That's good to know. Now, maybe we can now move to preventive medication. Of course, the last years have been really exciting, new developments. So maybe you can tell us something about it. What changed the field?
Yeah, in terms of the preventive medications, Rolf, it's completely changed now. After introduction of monoclonal antibodies against CGRP or its receptor, our clinical practice changed completely. It's a really good news for our patients, first of all, but it's also quite rewarding for me as a neurologist to practice headache medicine, because now we see drugs are specifically designed to target migraine mechanisms, and in such cases, usually they are pretty efficacious and also safe and well tolerated. So this is really good news for our patients and for our colleagues across the Europe, so they can use these medications to prevent migraine attacks. And the goal is that, and how they work, that they reduce a number of the migraine days, they reduce intensity of migraine attacks, they reduce duration of migraine attacks, and let's say roughly for the all monoclonal antibodies, there is a chance, 50% chance, that you can reduce your number of migraine days by 50%. So it's quite impressive. Plus, so far, real-world evidence that has showed pretty good adherence and persistence in terms of these medications, and very few side effects, and in general, well-tolerated. So it's exciting news with monoclonal antibodies. As I also mentioned when we talked about acute medications, that the two of the GPANs are also coming as a preventive medication. So we are also going to have some tablets. So I have to say that monoclonal antibodies are either self-injectors for the subcutaneous injection or IV formulation. But for the GPANs, we're going to have tablets using for migraine prevention. Also, really good news for our patients and also for all neurologists practicing headache medicine, or general neurologists seeing headache patients. I know that they see a lot of headache patients.
Yes. When we look at these drugs using the CGRP pathway, do you think these are disease-modifying treatments? Patients always want the healing of the migraine, and they ask, do I have to take the medication forever, or will my migraine go away forever? What is your opinion on this topic?
Dagny, the question you raised is very important. It's about the disease-modifying effect of the new class of medications, monoclonal antibodies against CGRP or the GPANs as a preventive medications. And the second question was about how long they should treat their attacks. And this question is important for patients because they are asking this question. So for the first one is that I would say that already while you treat them, you modify the disease because you change the threshold. It's all about the definition, what you call a disease modifying. I would say that this is a disease modifying treatment when you treat the patients. Okay, this is very important. But it is also important we provide our patients with realistic expectations. We are not about to cure migraine, to remove the migraine from their body. It's impossible. So what we do is that we can provide them with the medications which can provide us control of migraine attacks. This is very important. So it's not a freedom from migraine, it's more that the control of migraine. This is a main goal, and this is what should be communicated to our patients. So we were modified. But if you talk about the very conservative definition of disease-modifying effect, you can also see in your clinical practice, I'm sure, that when you stop giving the medication, because we have some kind of, we call them, the pause or breaks or drug holidays, what do you call it? So you see how many patients, that the vast majority reverse, back to frequent attacks, and they they ask for the medication again. So it's not a permanent disease-modifying effect what we see with this new class of medications. In terms of the how long they should be treated, well, we don't have really good evidence to claim that it is should be 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. We can only rely on evidence on the long-term efficacy, safety, and tolerability. So we have for some medications, we have a 1 year data, for some medications, 2 years data, for other medication, we have up to 5 years data. So showing that in terms of efficacy, in terms of safety and tolerability, they are, let's say, efficacious, safe, and well tolerated. So this is very important. But we as an experts, we need to put provide our colleagues with consensus on terms of the breaks. That's why we say, according to the European Headache Federation recommendation and guidelines, we should treat the patients something between 12 and 18 months and then try to stop and see if the patients are doing fine. So they don't need anymore this drug. But if they reverse to the frequent migraine attacks, we can reintroduce these medications. I have to state that that this approach have been always used in clinical practice with also with non-specific medications such as beta blockers and anti-epileptics in our clinical practice. We are not in business of treating patients forever. So that's why we acknowledge that the migraine is a paroxysmal disease and you can also have some spontaneous, let's say, improvements and or remission of the disease. That's why we need to have these breaks. But you can decide as a physician case by case whether it is appropriate to do it now or you shall wait, let's say, 2 years or 5 years before you start doing that.
Thank you for this advice. A lot of good news, but just maybe a little bit of concern because I heard, of course, that there was a lot of concern in the past with the triptans and cardiovascular risk. And also with this new medication, there's maybe some concern about cardiovascular safety. So actually my question is, if a patient has a cardiovascular risk profile, would you still give this medication? What about the long-term effects?
Well, the vast majority of the patients we see in the clinical practice, they do not have risk factors at such extent or the history of the cardiovascular disease that will be concerned of using either triptans or the new medications in this group of patients. But case by case, we see some patients with a history of the cardiovascular disease or just a recent history of the cardiovascular disease and what to do in such cases. Well, when we talk about the triptans, they are contraindicated because of their vasoconstricting effect on the vessels. But we've used triptans for 30 years now, and we didn't see any increase of events, cardiovascular events in patients with migraine. So they're pretty safe drugs, but we acknowledge that it is contraindicated in this group of patients. That's why we cannot prescribe them. But with the new medications, there is no label about the contraindication for the cardiovascular disease, except for the one monoclonal antibody, there is a risk of the developing of the hypertension or worsening of pre-existing hypertension using this medication. Well, when we talk about the new class of medications antagonizing CGRP or its receptor, because CGRP is very important for the regulation of the vascular tone, there is some concern among our colleagues and experts using of these medications with in patients with a history of the cardiovascular disease. As I said, that only one label says that you have to be careful with the patients with hypertension, but otherwise no contraindications. So the good news is that the human body is not depending on the one molecule exclusively. So there are different mediators involved in the regulation of the vascular tone, including nitric oxide and other molecules and mediators. So that's why I wouldn't expect that. But the consensus here, at least at the Danish Headache Center, is that if you have an active cardiovascular disease, meaning in the recent 6 months, then we will hesitate. We will not, prescribe this medication for these patients. But the patients with a history, many years ago, or a year ago, or 2 years ago,
we would not be, let's say, concerned, and we will administrate these medications. In terms of the long-term safety, we have to show pharmacovigilance using these new medications, of course, as a practicing neurologist. But so far, data 2 up to 5 years suggest that there is no, let's say, alarming signals in this data suggesting that we may increase the incidence of the cardiovascular events in patients receiving these new medications.
So thank you for this answer. I think this is a really important topic. Maybe last but not least, some other important topic regarding migraine-specific therapies, or more or less migraine-specific therapies, it's neuromodulation. So what is your opinion? What do you think are the most important non-invasive and invasive types of neuromodulation? What do you recommend your patients if they ask for such treatment options?
Yeah, neuromodulation as a principle of treating migraine acutely, but also as a preventive approach, been now around for over the last, let's say, 5-10 years. The problem is, Dagny, that, I mean, in many countries, at least in Denmark, I know, they are not reimbursed. And this is a problem. So this is a one thing, and pay, not our patients are not willing to pay so much money, you know, for this type of treatment. If we talk about the evidence not, I would say, overwhelming. There is a evidence suggesting of some of them might work for the acute attacks, but again, in terms of the, let's say, if we compare them for the, you know, with the other new class of medications in terms of the classical endpoints, such as pain freedom at 2 hours for the acute medications and a reduction of monthly migraine days by 50% or the absolute reduction. So those trials have not been, I would say, a positive. Some of the endpoints were positive, but they were not primary endpoints. So I would be a little bit cautious in terms of the evidence. There is, of course, evidence suggesting that you can use it in the clinical practice. But as I said, it's not overwhelming. Plus the reimbursement problem. So that's why their use are very limited, at least in Europe. I don't know what's going on in the United States, but in Europe, it's very limited. And I would definitely also question the efficacy, tolerability, and safety of invasive methods, so we don't practice them in Denmark.
Well, thank you, Masoud, for this comprehensive overview and your insights and your advice. It's been exciting times in the migraine field, and also a lot happening in the coming years, I think. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.